The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Vinnie DeMarco is a name that we all know well in this town and in this state. He's been on the show more times than I can count, and as have the issues he cares about. We run into each other in the halls of Annapolis all the time and on the streets and in various vegan hangouts. And a couple of years back, maybe a year or so ago back, there was an article written by Michael Perchuk in the Nation magazine about what do we do now after Obama and organizing, and he talked about Vinnie DeMarco and said in there, it indicated he was writing a book about Vinnie DeMarco. And a couple weeks ago, Vinnie calls and goes, Mark, the book is out about me, so let me drop it off quickly. And he did. The book is called The DeMarco Factor, Transforming Public Will into Political Power, written by Michael Perchuk, who is was co-chair of the Federal Trade Commission, 1977 to 81, and wrote the book Smoke in Their Eyes, Lessons in the Movement, Leadership from the Tobacco Wars, and joins us here in our studios in Hamden. And welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, Mark, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
So you're not from Baltimore and you're not from Maryland.
No.
So tell me how you even became aware of the crusading Vinnie DeMarco.
It's a perfect story. I was at the Federal Trade Commission before that, the Senate Commerce Committee, working on consumer legislation, and it was always the work I did, consumer protection, public health. And when I left the Trade Commission with the help of Ronald Reagan.
he didn't want you there.
No, he didn't want me there. He didn't want me there a lot. But with a good friend, David Cohn, who was the head of Common Cause at the time, we set up something called the Advocacy Institute. And the purpose of the Advocacy Institute was to help citizen activists in all kinds of issues, a lot of them public health related. Avoid doing the dumb things we did when we were younger to get legislation passed and to fight the lobbies. And especially, what a specialty for me from way back was making life miserable for tobacco companies.
You enjoyed that.
I enjoyed that. I don't make life miserable for smokers. I have a lot of feeling for smokers. It's pretty tough.
I was one for a long time.
Yeah, but tobacco companies and worked on that a lot. And so we did some work with the tobacco control movement and training advocates. And in about 1992 or 93, I had a visit from an old friend who was running a small foundation. And she herself had been a victim of gun violence. And she said, well, it's nice you've done things on tobacco. That's easy. Not that I thought it was so easy at the time, but you've got to do something about guns. You've got to figure out how to teach people to go after the National Rifle Association. And I said, honestly, well, I don't know anything about guns, gun movement. And she said, take a year and look around the country and tell me, find out who is doing something serious and successful to fight the NRA. And we did. We talked to colleagues around the country and people working in California and gun control, and all the fingers pointed right next door to Maryland and a fellow named Vinnie DeMarco. And Maryland is against handgun abuse. So I made it my business to get to know this guy, Vinnie DeMarco, and what I learned, I liked. And for a while, we asked Vinnie to come to our institute, the Advocacy Institute, and help teach young advocates about advocacy. And so I followed him. And there were 6 statewide campaigns in which he beat the NRA. And then the folks I knew in Maryland, who were the Smoke Free Maryland Coalition, came to Vinnie and said, we're up against a dead end in Annapolis on trying to raise the cigarette tax.
In tobacco country, as you write about.
Tobacco country. And Mike Miller, as the president of the Senate, was dead opposed to any raises in taxes. And not only that, but there was a budget surplus. And then there was Bruce Berriano, probably the best known, if not the most notorious, tobacco lobbyist in the country, and an old friend by coincidence.
An old friend of yours.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We worked on the Hill together. And Bruce is a brilliant lobbyist. They'd stop the coalition dead. And the coalition came to Vinny and said, you know, you've done gun control and so well, and maybe you can help us get the cigarette tax passed. So Vinny then proceeded to go through what I consider to be an absolutely unique way of planning and strategizing citizen campaigns when you've got general public support and a very powerful lobby. And for the next 2 to 3 years, Vinny developed a campaign, and at the end of it, he got a tobacco tax increase. I got more and more interested in him. And then Peter Bielenson from Baltimore came to him, and Baltimore, it sounds like. Is that the right pronunciation? Yeah.
Well, it depends. It could be the old classic way of saying is Balmer. Balmer.
Balmer.
Balmer. Balmer, Maryland. Balmer, Merlin. Balmer, Merlin. That's where I'm from.
Vinny, Peter Bielenson from Baltimore came to Vinny and said, health care in this country is a disgrace, especially the fact that so many people don't have decent health care. Can you help us run a campaign for health care? And Vinny did some very careful thinking and polling and decided this was something that could be won and began another campaign. Only this time, he ran into an unexpected block because everyone I knew in Maryland expected Kathleen Kennedy Townsend to be the next governor. Vinny could work with her, and Vinny's wife, Molly, was a very trusted assistant. And Kathleen Kennedy did not become the governor, but Ehrlich became the governor.
Bob Ehrlich, right.
Bob Ehrlich. And Vinny was a very depressed human being for several hours. And then he began to see that there were ways that they could get some things done, even with Ehrlich in the White House. In the governor's mansion. And so I began to watch and study how Vinny made progress, even when he had a hard row to hoe. With a tobacco campaign, it was Miller and Bariano. Health care, Ehrlich. What's his name?
Bob Ehrlich?
Yeah, Ehrlich. Bob Ehrlich. And yet, over the next several years, even over Ehrlich's opposition, he began to make progress. And then with Vinny, because nothing is final with Vinny. He keeps going. Right. But finally, for me, in terms of saying I've got to write about Vinny, was the defeat of Walmart when the legislation got passed over the Ehrlich veto that would require Walmart to double the amount of money that it paid for health care for its workers and expand its coverage to the temporary workers.
I remember that.
And while that legislation was stopped by a federal court, it still was a tremendous accomplishment. And then I continued to follow Vinny as I worked on the book. And nothing I learned about Vinny changed my mind that this is an amazing guy.
It's interesting, though. You some of the people that you talk about in the book with him, there are people who obviously come up through the book a lot. Bruce Bariano.
Yes.
And they're almost polar opposites in many ways.
Absolutely.
In terms of who they represent and what they fight for. And their styles of fighting.
Right.
And Senator Mike Miller, who's had some disparaging things to say about him. Matter of fact, one of the quotes you have for me in this book is about Mike Miller.
Yes.
And what he said about Vinny. But let's talk about this. I found that interesting. I mean, you also talk about Peter Bielenson, and there's some differences that Vinny's had over the years with different advocates. I mean, when he started the Health Care for All, this is interesting, how the mind of an organizer like Vinny and how it changed. You can describe it. Because he began really as a single-payer advocate.
Yes, he did.
And that's when I remember that first debate we had on my show when he came on as debating that.
Oh, so, that's interesting. Yeah.
And now there's a huge gap between many single-payer advocates and Vinny. Talk a bit about that. That's an interesting kind of political and thoughtful change he made.
Well, Vinny is very deeply committed in his soul to doing the right thing for people, but he's also a very practical organizer. And primarily he takes on campaigns in which there are very powerful opposition interests, special interests, but campaigns in which there is broad popular support for what he wants to accomplish. And he does a lot of very, very sensitive polling, but that's not all. he talks to people. He talks to people in communities. And after he had agreed to work on healthcare, and you're right, he started out as a single payer advocate because most experts feel that's the most efficient way to get healthcare, the lowest cost way to get healthcare. But Vinny doesn't jump into a campaign, and he spent almost 4 years coming up with a plan for expanding healthcare to all Marylanders. And during that 4 years, he and his colleagues just about talked to everyone in the state. They had town meetings. They talked to various stakeholders. They talked to groups like the unions who were normally in favor of teachers' union and the government workers' union, who are normally those most in favor of progressive legislation. But they worried about losing the healthcare benefits that they had negotiated for their members. And most people that he found in polling and in talking favored expanding health care to the poor and others who couldn't mm-hmm. afford it, but didn't want to lose the health care they had. And at the end of 2 or 2.5 years, he talked to the members of his coalition, all the while building a strong coalition of groups. I think it was as many as 2,000 groups who generally signed a resolution favoring the expansion of health care for all, but didn't sign on to any specific plan. And and also during the process, he did something very interesting that very few people do, in my experience in advocates. He went to the experts. People go to the experts, and he was very lucky because the people at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health were all experts in healthcare, and they began to come up with a plan. But what he did that was unusual is he made the experts listen to people. At these town meetings, the experts is highly qualified PhDs and others and doctors at Hopkins were forced to sit and listen to how people felt about healthcare and what they feared and what they wanted. And they then went back to the drawing board and began to draw a healthcare for all plan, which was not a single player plan, but it was economically sound and it would have brought healthcare to all the people of Maryland. And then he went back to his coalition and explained it, and they were very angry with him. And one of the ironies about all this is that you're absolutely right. The single-payer people were very angry, and some of them still angry. Very angry. Others were disappointed, but they understood why Vinny came to this conclusion, because I had a lot of respect for Vinny. And Peter Bielenson, who believes very strongly in single-payer, he too was persuaded that this was the only way to practically expand health care. But one of the ironies is that one of the things Vinny said, and as bitter as Vinny gets, because Vinny is not a bitter person, the people who are the diehards on single payer were the same people that voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. And as we were talking earlier, one of the ironies is that Ralph Nader is an old friend and colleague of mine. And I sent him the book and I said to him, I'd love to have a blurb from you, a comment, but you need to know that Vinny DeMarco is pretty mad at you for running for president in 2000. And he's not a single payer advocate now. And Ralph Nader, who no one thinks of as being very humorous, Ralph said, well, nobody's perfect.
Actually, Ralph, I think, is very funny.
He is funny. You are right.
He's a very funny man. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. Digress.
Yeah. But there are times when he isn't funny.
He can be
very righteous. And he loves Vinny, and he loves the book because he really feels that Vinny is the model of a public citizen.
That, to me, is interesting because one of the things that when you said before we started this conversation that Ralph Nader looked at the book and liked the book and appreciates and likes Vinny's DeMarco's energy and how he does his work, it's because he understands and respects the power of organizing and what it means and what it takes to be an organizer.
Yes, I think that's right.
And
some of the other qualities, it's interesting. My favorite quotes in the book, and they were quotes that I got from people who had worked with Vinny in Maryland and mostly tobacco control and who'd come to our institute for training. And I said, you know, just basically, what's it like to work with Vinny DeMarco? And one of them said, Vinny DeMarco is the world's biggest pain in the ass, with a big smile. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was not an insult. This was a compliment. The second one said, Vinny DeMarco walks with God. And One of the things I discovered is that one of Vinny's successes is certainly his energy and his persistence, and the fact that he does drive everybody crazy up to the very point of breaking. But that's part of being an organizer. But there's a quality about himself as a human being, which first of all makes people tolerate being asked to do things, but more than that, trusting him. And understanding, as Bishop Miles, Douglas Miles, is a very strong ally, and Bishop Miles said, Vinny DeMarco is one of the most authentic people I have ever known. What you see is what you get. And it makes him able to work with a whole wide range of people. And I think Ralph Nader appreciated those qualities. And spiritual is the strongest word that I can think of for describing the quality, although Vinny is not an overtly religious man,
right.
but there's something of the spirit that moves people that's very important.
One thing I discovered about Vinny that I discovered after he and I met to kind of patch over something that happened, and we did, was that he was actually born in Italy, that I didn't know until this year. He wasn't born in the United States. Everybody was born in Italy, and they came to New Jersey.
Yes.
I had a wonderful talk with Vinny's, especially Vinny's mother, and I asked, when did you know that Vinny was going to be special?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, before he was born.
Right.
And she described what this marvelous baby arriving in this hill town in Italy, and he has tremendous support from his family, and there is a strong family ethic, and his brother and sisters are very committed to public interest causes, and he was bred in a rich environment,
an Italian Union home.
Yes, he was on a picket line,
right,
with his father, who was a longshoreman and with a strong union, when he was 11 or 12. He comes to his social justice advocacy very naturally.
People don't realize that thing about Vinny. It's important that the book points out, just his background, is that he's a working class kid.
Absolutely.
He's not a kid who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, who lives up in the suburbs. He's a working class kid.
He is, but he's also deceptive because he's also a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
When he graduated from Hopkins, he's a very good student, and he took a year to get a master's in history. And then when he graduated, also after law school, he went with one of the most prestigious and high-paying law firms in the country, in Washington, D.C., and couldn't stand it. But his intellectual capacity and his smarts and his learning are very deceptive, because he comes across, as you say, as a natural, comfortable, working class guy,
which is where he came from. So, but one of the things that's interesting, where you describe the struggles and the campaigns that he's been through, the gun control and health care and smoking and all the things that he's done, and really is one against the odds. One of the interesting things is that the multi-layered way that he approaches organizing, and what you wrote about in terms,
yes,
of what can be learned from this skill set.
Yes.
And you can speak about it for a minute. I mean, the idea of his adversary, nemesis, you would never call them friends, but there's respect there, grudgingly, I think, between Senate President Mike Miller and Vinny DeMarco.
Yes. Yes.
Another one thing in your book you're talking about, sometimes when he walks down the halls of Annapolis, people run to their offices. They don't want
to. Right. But his friend, Len Lucci,
right,
who's a wonderful lobbyist, says he's there to catch them.
Right.
So it's as if they play good cop, bad cop. Well, there are a number of things that Vinny does that other advocates, in my experience, over a long time, don't do. And essentially, he's self-taught. And he's self-taught through each campaign. I mean, he was thrown into the middle of the first gun control campaigns. He was working for the Attorney General, Curran, and as an assistant attorney general. And he'd never been in a campaign, although he'd worked as an undergraduate. He'd been a volunteer.
You talk about the Hopkins crew that
got
together.
Yeah,
right.
He was a freshman at Johns Hopkins, and he tried out for the debating team. And a group of them came together, and they're still together. Len Lucci was one, and Bernie Horn or others, and for fun, when other undergraduates going out and drinking, and which Vinny doesn't do, and partying, which Vinny doesn't do, they basically decided to have some fun working with the young Democrats and getting legislation passed. And Vinny learned a lot from doing that, not just by doing it, but from the skills of these other colleagues. And he's still working with them some 20 years later. So he did have experience, but he never read any manual on how to build coalitions. And when he was thrown into the gun battle earlier, and it was for the control of Saturday Night Specials and handguns and others, he felt his way. And one of the things he did was to begin building coalitions much broader than people had done before. And it was in that campaign that he really discovered the power of working with the faith community, the churches, and all the churches and all the other religious groups, and how important they were and how powerful they could be, especially when combined with other citizen groups and public health groups and others. That was a lesson he learned from the gun campaigns. He also learned how to work with the media. And he's extraordinarily successful. And Bernie Horne, I think, in the book is quoted as saying, what comes out of Vinny's mouth is incredibly quotable. And that's a, you know, that's an art. And he understands the media. He loves the media. And he talks about the media strategically as a telephone to the people. When he plans a campaign, and he may plan a campaign in several different stages with different strategies for each stage. The first stage might very well be the public, educating the public. He'll learn from polls what the public believes and what the public doesn't believe, what its attitudes are. And then we'll take a couple of years to educate the public through public meetings, but also through the media on the reasons why the legislation he's beginning to work on is really something they should want. For example, in tobacco control and raising cigarette excise taxes, how important it was for kids, how much good evidence there was that if you raise the price of cigarettes, teenagers just don't take it up. It's too much money for them. And that also cigarette taxes can pay for things that people want, like extra classes after school hours for kids. And he'll spend 2 years doing public education. Well, his form of public education is often working through the media, using different ways of approaching them. And then he moves on. And he won't go and lobby the legislature until he's satisfied that he has not only the public generally focused and on his side, but also a coalition of citizen groups that have signed on. And then he won't go to the legislature until there's an election. Most organizations I've worked with, coalitions that I've worked with, are eager to go and lobby. You know, we want a bill, we go lobby and ask our legislators. Most of the time, the legislators aren't interested. But when legislators are paying attention to people, especially community groups, is when they're running for re-election or election, in the primary or in a general election. And Vinny organizes nonpartisan, but campaigns to force every candidate for state office to sign a very specific pledge. I pledge to support a $1.50 cigarette excise tax increase. And then he knows from his polling that if you've got candidates, a candidate that signed the pledge and a candidate that hasn't signed the pledge, there are people who will change their votes. And in the election, doesn't take many. Two or three candidates may very well win or lose based upon whether they took the pledge or not.
Pardon me. And the interesting thing about the way you write about Vinny's work is, and you kind of pointed to it for a minute as you were answering the last question, is that his organizing is beyond the legislature, which is why it is often so successful.
Yes.
I mean, when he did this, the Walmart campaign, when he and to insist that Walmart pay and companies that over 10,000 employees have to pay X amount of money for health insurance for their employees. And he was able to not just list the support of unions and churches and community groups, but he went to places like Giant.
Exactly.
And as you write about it, and got other businesses in this coalition
exactly
to push it over the top.
And and again, this pragmatism. His overall plan would have involved forcing companies of all sizes to expand their health care. But he understood that he would evoke the opposition of the entire business community, but that if he focused on the companies that employed the most employees, and there were several others, but the others, it just happens in Maryland, already paid good health care.
Right.
The one company that didn't was Walmart. So much of the business community basically was neutral. But the people like Giant Food and Safeway, who are not only paying their workers good, decent health care benefits, but ended up paying for Walmart's workers, because Walmart's workers were so hard up that they had to fall upon the public welfare funding for unemployed people, and so Giant and the others were paying their competitors' health care, and that's why the name of the bill was the Fair Share Bill. Everybody in Maryland should pay their fair share.
Now, you've written this book not for Marylanders to read. It's a book for people all across the nation will read, obviously. That's why
we
you
hope.
Wrote the book. So there are a couple of things here with that. One is clearly, I mean, you think that Vinnie DeMarco's style of organizing, his way of working, his approach to advocating for consumers, for citizens, is an approach you think that can be not copied, then can be learned from.
Yes.
And that people, this is, for you, my sense of this book for you is as the beginning of an organizing manual for others to think about how to organize in a more creative way than Saul Alinsky did with his original work.
Yes, I think that's exactly right, Mark. And actually the design of the book itself is... It's supposed to be seductive,
right,
to younger people, because the stories of the campaigns are good stories. And Vinny is an incredibly colorful character.
Well, you've been able to weave good stories in with kind of how-tos.
And at the end of the book,
you have it all there.
There are two sections. And, you know, at the Advocacy Institute, we tried to teach people how to do this. I was never quite happy with our ability to do this. And we developed for example, a very simple strategy planning method. 9 questions to ask yourself when you're doing a campaign.
That was very good, by the way.
Thank you. Right. In fact, learning from Vinny, which I did, I learned more from watching Vinny than I had any other experience. I modified those lessons because Vinny, but basically they're there for exactly what you're talking about. Young people who are interested in doing advocacy, people who are working with coalitions on social justice anywhere. And I think they're quite general. They can be copied. The harder question is Vinny's style of leadership and whether Vinnie DeMarco is unique and nobody could possibly be another Vinnie DeMarco. And it's harder, but there is an answer. The qualities that Vinny shows in his organizing are qualities that many people have some of. You know, the energy, you know, and the feeling for people, the willingness to listen to people. And you can put together, if you're doing a campaign that has popular support, you can put together a combined leadership of people who really have many of these qualities. It's not as if he's off somewhere in a universe where other human beings can't dwell. These are human qualities.
With Vinny, though, I mean, there are a couple of unique things. I talked to Garrison Keillor once several times and interviewed Garrison. And one of the things that Garrison said I said, how do you do all the things that you do? How do you accomplish the things you accomplish? He said, 20 years ago, I gave away my TV set and I never watch it. And I do not drink. I gave up alcohol. And I focus on my work, and that's it. And so, in many ways, reading your book made me think, well, this is, in many ways, like Vinnie DeMarco.
Well, in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. Vinnie is very single-minded.
Very single-minded.
There's no question about that. And work is at one center of his life. But one thing that differs from what Garrison Keillor, whom I greatly admire, said, is that there is another center to his life, and that's his family.
Right.
And he will drop testifying at a hearing, if the hearing runs too long and his son Tony is pitching in a high school ball game.
I've experienced that on my show.
And, but the other way in which he's different, this is an important part of what I learned. You know, I knew about Vinny, just from my experience watching him and talking to him, but I did not know about the people around him, the people who work with him, and they are extraordinary. I mean, one of the tests of a good leader is to know what he himself or she herself is not great at, but to know what he or she needs as colleagues. And Vinny has surrounded himself with superb people. Glenn Schneider, who's a deputy for many years, is a brilliant organizer. And Rosanna Miles, Bishop Miles and Rosanna Miles. Rosanna Miles is also an incredible organizer in various communities. She's also the person that can go in and walk in to say to Vinny, Vinny, you're being a stubborn mule. You know, don't do this. You know, listen to us. You're making a mistake. And Vinny will listen. Len Lucci, whom I mentioned, is a lobbyist who's worked with Vinny back to Hopkins days.
Right.
He's a terrific lobbyist in Maryland, and he dresses like a lobbyist, and he looks like a lobbyist, and he doesn't frighten people, but he's just as committed, and he's as a lobbyist even more effective than Vinny. So, and those are the people around him, and then they're the people he draws into coalitions, and they have resources. I mean, the labor leaders he works with, and others.
What do you want ultimately people to come out of this book? I like Vinny DeMarco too. I think he's a fine human being, and he's got a great heart and a great mind, and he knows how to organize and knows how to fight for a cause, and that's his life. As a Harvard grad, he could do anything he wanted to, but this is what he's doing. So, what do you want people to walk away with? Because clearly, you as we talked about a little bit ago, you've written this book in some sense because you admire Vinny, but also because you want to see things organized in this country and moved ahead in certain levels.
Absolutely. The last part of the book, it's the epilogue of the book,
right.
Written afterwards, says, and the title is, What Would Vinny Do? And I take a quick look, just as the book was being finished, at the frustration many people have with the Obama administration.
Right.
And disappointment that many of the things they thought Obama would do, he can't do. He's not able to do. And their frustration is with him. And my own feeling is that their frustration needs to be with themselves. That people who really want major legislation, major change in this country passed, have to understand that, yes, it's important to find candidates who are decent, who share their values, and who want to achieve the things that they want to achieve. But it's not enough to vote for them and then hope that they'll do it. What Vinny basically has shown that if you want major legislation to pass, you've got to organize separately from electing the right people. You've got to organize campaigns that may take 4 years or 6 years or 8 years or 10 years. You've got to educate the public, not just that it'd be nice to have health care, but on very specifics of what needs to be done and make sure they understand it and make sure they also go to other candidates, like the candidates for the House and the Senate, and say, we'll vote for you, but you've got to sign a pledge. So that when a good president or a good governor gets elected, they've got something to work with. And we don't have a parliamentary democracy. You know, you elect a president in a parliamentary democracy, the party that wins has the opportunity to pass its agenda. Everybody in the Congress, everybody in the Senate is elected independently. And that's what we see as one of the great problems Obama has in getting his agenda passed. There are independent Democrats who just don't believe it or are afraid to vote with him. If they had, as Chris Van Hollen says, an army of voters, an army that was organized through coalitions of a huge range of groups, church groups and others, that would make a difference. And there's one other story in the book. Which actually does involve something very much like this. Because of Vinny's work in the state on tobacco control, the National Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, which is a good, strong citizen organization, and saw what Vinny was doing here and actually helped him in the state on tobacco because they know the field. They went to Vinny and said, we've been trying for 10 years, 12 years, to pass legislation in Congress that would give the Food and Drug Administration power over the tobacco companies. They were beaten in 1998, 1980, 1999. They were beaten. And in fact, ironically, the last book I wrote, which is called Smoke in Their Eyes, was about the fact that the tobacco control movement destroyed itself by fighting among itself as to what they wanted and what they didn't want, and missed an opportunity to pass the legislation. And the Bush administration was opposed to it. The Republicans basically buried it. What Tobacco-Free Kids asked Vinny to do was to see what to replicate what he had done in Maryland, but also had helped do in many other states for them, which is to build health and faith coalitions nationally and as well as in the states. And one of the things that happened is that Faith United Against Tobacco became a major political force in fighting within the Congress for FDA regulation passage of legislation. And that legislation passed early in the Obama administration with 2/3 of both houses voting for it. Why? Because the Faith United Coalition amazingly included not only the liberal churches, the progressive right. churches like the United Methodists and but the Southern Baptists.
That was an interesting part of the book. I had no idea about this campaign until I read your book.
Well, this is truly amazing. The Southern Baptists, as most people know, are among the most conservative churches in the country, especially in the South. And Vinny approached them, along with colleagues from the Tobacco Free Kids, a wonderful woman named Patricia Sosa. And at first he approached them and they said, we're not interested. We've got three issues, gay marriage, stem cell research, abortions. We're not interested in health. And Vinny and Patricia went away. And then several months later, somebody said, there's a new lobbyist for the Southern Baptists. You ought to go talk to him. It's a fellow named Barrett Duke. And Barrett Duke was very responsive. He cared about it. He had family problems in which someone died from smoking. And he said, this is an issue Southern Baptists believe in. And he, in turn, involved the head of the Southern Baptists, the chief spokesman, Dr. Reverend Richard Land. And he, too, said, this is important for us. And the chief lobbyist for the Methodists and the chief lobbyist for the Southern Baptists became the co-leaders of Faith United. And they were very passionate. And Vinny tells a story when he first met Dr. Land and said, I'm very happy you're working with us, and we really appreciate it. And Land said, Vinny, I wanted to say that the tobacco company executives have cloven hoofs, but my media people wouldn't let me say that. And this was not just signing on. This was actually passionate advocacy. And the great part is the Southern Baptists know who Vinny is, that he's a liberal, that he worked, on the Ted Kennedy's campaign for president, that he doesn't share their position on many issues, but they trust him, they like him, they know that when Vinny is focused on this issue, that's the issue he's working on, and that they can trust him as an ally, it's an amazing quality. There is an old saying at the advocacy world, which Vinny personifies: no permanent friends, no permanent enemies.
That's very interesting, and that's very true about Vinny DeMarco on many levels. This has been really fascinating. I'm glad you wrote this book. I mean,
Thank you.
So much because it's just about Vinny, but because of I think that people need as many ideas about how to organize to change America as they can find. And this is one of the books that will fit into that in one of our stepping stones. It was really great to read it and good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Mark. And one last thing I would say is this may be the only optimistic political book you read this year.
Michael Perchik, the book is The DeMarco Factor, Transforming Public Will into Political Power. You can go to our website, steinershow.org, and link to it. And it was wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. Find out more at www.hopkinsmedicine.org.